Hello, and thank you for downloading episode 49 of The New Quantum Era. I'm your host, Sebastian Hassinger. Today's episode was recorded at the American Physical Society's Global Summit a couple weeks back with support from the APS, who very kindly provided space where I could record these conversations away from the noise and bustle and the continuous activity of the Global Summit. This episode is also brought to you with support from Quantum Machines Incorporated, whose OPX 1000 is tailored for large-scale quantum computers, offering unparalleled performance, scalability, and HPC integration, including an ultra-fast interface to GPU and CPU accelerators for boosting quantum control. In this episode, I was joined by another of the critical pioneers of the field, John Martinez. John has a storied academic career, but is probably best known for his work at Google, where he led the effort to build a system that carried out the quantum supremacy experiment in 2019. It represented a major milestone in terms of progress and also visibility of the field of quantum computing. I think for a lot of people, that's when quantum computing sort of got on their radar. John's been working on a new startup with co-founders Alan Ho and Robert McDermott called CoLab. They recently came out of stealth mode, and John has made time to sit down with me to talk about CoLab's goals and unique approach to quantum computing. I was so excited about the conversation with John, I kind of skipped over the usual intro to an interview, so you'll hear me jump right into it. I don't think that will be a barrier to enjoying the conversation, so let's hear it. Talked last, you were still in stealth mode,
right?
Knowing that you were sort of out of stealth mode now, I was skimming back over that paper on building a scalable million qubit system.
Oh yeah, that we published a few months ago.
Right, exactly, right. Exactly. Which is a great read. It's a really good overview of the systematically sort of like what are all the. Go ahead.
So, did you get through the whole paper? It's a long paper.
It's a long paper. This morning, no, I did not skip.
Yeah, that's okay.
But a few months ago.
What I like is it talks about the whole stack, and whatever you're interested in, you can read that section and figure out what's going on.
That's right.
But the whole point of the paper was to really talk seriously about everything.
Right.
So that people can see that there's a plan. Obviously, things change,
okay,
as you do that. But and also that we thought, not just, you know, how to improve the qubits now, but how you go to 1,000, 10,000, 100,000, a million. Okay, and what we're trying to do is build on the infrastructure and test it at a few qubits or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's going to be upward compatible.
Right.
We're not going to say, oh, we're going to use integrated circuit fab. You know, you have to go much deeper into that to make sure that it's really going to work.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, that's what we've been thinking for quite a few years now, as you said, in stealth mode. And I didn't have the motivation to work on it until our collaborators worked on the whole stack and said, okay, you know, it's really time to do that. But yeah, that was kind of one of the nicer papers I've been on in my career, because it just pulls together all this thinking that we've been doing over the past decade or more.
And what immediately occurred to me was something that you said in our conversation a couple of years ago that really stuck with me, in that, you have a systems approach to the way you're thinking. You're not, experimental physics gets you so far, but to build something with this kind of long-term roadmap, there needs to be an architectural sort of philosophy and a systems design kind of approach. And that's really apparent in that paper, I think.
Yeah, that's right. And thank you for noticing that, because that's kind of what the big focus was. And again, you know, what is the long-term vision? What do you have to build to do something? And then you back away. Now, I've been thinking about this for a long time, but the paper forced us to be real disciplined to communicate that properly. And I'm glad, you know, it got across to you, right, because that was kind of our intent.
Yeah.
And to do that. And the other nice thing, of course, and you know, now we're out of stealth mode, and I'll talk about it in my talk later today, is we have a very unusual business model in that we're collaborating,
right,
with a lot of semiconductor companies.
Yeah.
So typically what the various quantum computing people, like Google, is they're big enough, they can fund the whole stack.
Right, right.
You know, as a startup, as ever, we can't do that. So we collaborate with many people, and especially with many semiconductor companies who have really deep expertise,
right,
in different areas.
Right.
And that way you get to take advantage of that expertise. And specifically, they're going to be able to scale better because they know how to do, and they'll know how to keep costs down. Which is like no one talks about cost for a quantum computer, and it's big, but the hope is we can manage that a little bit better. Now, the hard part about this is you have to share, and you have to collaborate, and you have to communicate to this whole team, you know, the details of what,
right,
you're going to do. And that's kind of, everyone kind of wants to hold their information tight and not share their infrastructure. But we decided that, you know, that's the best way to move forward practically.
Now I'm getting where the name Colab originates from.
Yeah, that, it's
really
Q plus collaboration. Yeah. Yes, that's you got it. And that was kind of the ethos that we started with.
Right.
Is, it, you know, that way. And, you know, this is not that crazy of a business, because when you think about the computer industry, semiconductor,
sure,
industry, it was like IBM. For many decades. And then in the 70s, and especially in the 80s, instead of everyone doing everything,
right,
it all branched out and people did their different specialties.
Right.
And there's a natural reason why that happened,
yeah,
and it's better.
Well, I mean, that reflects the sort of systems thinking right from the beginning, right? You're anticipating this thing growing to a scale where one entity, I mean, even an IBM, even at its peak, still had a supply chain, right?
Yeah,
I mean, there,
right,
still is this sort of large multi-party kind of collaboration,
yeah,
that needs to come together.
That's right.
To,
yeah, and we think that's the right model.
Yeah.
And we think we're far enough along that it's time to switch. It's like the 70s,
right,
you know, in the semiconductor industry. It's time to switch. And, you know, we're trying out that model, but, you know, it's actually been working pretty well.
That's great.
And we like it a lot. It makes sense. And then, you know, we, Colab acts as system integrator at the low-level hardware end.
Right.
And then in our collaboration at the very high end, we have HP Enterprises.
Right.
Which makes supercomputers.
Right.
So they're going to be the system integrator,
right,
at the high end. And when you think about their expertise in software and running complex workloads, you know, that's really good collaboration.
Right. Well,
and we talk enough of the same language,
yes,
that it you know, we can do this.
Yeah, and it's also, I think, over the last couple of years has been a dawning realization that to put these devices, these eventual future devices, into productive kind of solutions, there's going to have to be very tight integration with classical computing,
oh, yeah,
at scale. So
right,
an HPE is a really good choice for that.
Yeah, HP is good. And the other thing that happened is in our paper that's coming out, hopefully in a journal, NVIDIA is now on the paper.
Oh, great.
And that would be a very good collaboration because, of course, they make powerful GPUs. And I think if you want to do the error correction decoding,
right,
like, let's say, simply and powerfully,
right, right,
then that's the way to do it. Now, they still have to show you can do it.
Yeah.
It's not obvious.
Yeah.
It's a hard problem.
One of many.
And for example, like Riverlane, they're trying to build ASICs, which is maybe the right way to go, but it's certainly a good way to go.
Right.
We do NVIDIA, and then, you know, we'll see what's better.
Well, and I noticed also you're partnering with Quantum Machines, because you call,
yes,
out in that paper at multiple sort of inflection points how the wiring and the control systems are going to be one of the major stumbling blocks,
right,
for transitioning, yeah, from
and,
NIST
and
to...
Yeah, we kind of took it at every power of 10, from 100 to 1,000,
right,
10,000, 100,000. We talk about what you need to do and how to think about that properly. And that was a very good way for us to kind of describe what's going on. So we have an integrated solution that scales to about 20,000 qubits.
Wow.
And then, you know, which is a one module, and then you put together the modules by tiling them together, which can then scale up, you know, to a couple hundred thousand to maybe a million. And then, you know, that's a pretty big dilution refrigerator, and maybe you want
to
think
about it. So that's all in one fridge you're expecting?
Well, we think at least about 200,000 is one fridge.
Great.
But
so you definitely have some new approaches to wiring and controls.
Well, that's
one big coax per qubit is not going to cut.
Well, actually, it's a brute force wiring.
Really?
But if you use the proper semiconductor, you have to use semiconductor manufacturing. Mm. So we're doing, you know, wafer scale integration, and then we're using flex.
Right.
For, you know, not coax, but flex.
Right.
You know, and people know how to make printed circuit boards.
Yeah.
Okay? And then you use CMOS control electronic ASICs, which we need to investigate. And, you know, so I think if you just do the brute force scaling, you can imagine a path forward.
Right.
Obviously, if we can combine things, and we have some ideas on that,
yeah,
where we can combine things at the right place, I think we can do that too. You know, but that's, you know, that's a long time.
Wow.
You know, but I would say the first thing we're doing is figuring out how to build a 20,000 qubit module with really good qubits.
Very cool. So that brings us to the qubits. You've obviously got a track record in working in superconducting qubits, transmons. What can you tell me about the way you're designing the qubits for CoLab?
Okay, so this is a very complicated system engineering problem, and
right,
people have a lot of different qubits to do that. But getting the right control and the right crosstalk and whatever is difficult. So we think adjustable qubits, adjustable couplers is the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Just this morning, I was listening to a very nice talk from a Chinese university who's been able to get this to work too.
Hmm.
And their numbers are good, and Google's done that.
Right.
Other people have done that. There's really some good reasons to think that that's the way to go. So it's that, and we think we have a design, we've done the theory, where we can make kind of the intrinsic errors, let's say the 2-qubit errors, that's the hardest thing, down in the 10 to the minus 4 range. If we just get the coherence of like 200 microseconds, we think it could be in the 3 times 10 to the minus 4 range. And that's including all the strays and everything. So, of course, that's on paper. Paper
yes.
qubits are the best.
They are the best.
So we have to make physical qubits. We have a design in the refrigerator right now that we're testing. And, you know, various things look good. So, you know, but we're starting the whole process just saying, okay, we have to make really good qubits. And, you know, what is that design?
Right.
What do we have to do? We understand that. And we're going to focus on that. And then once we can get that to work, or a few qubits to work, then at the same time, we're working on all the scaling things,
yeah,
so that hopefully we can do that relatively
right,
quickly. But, you know, there's a lot of control and software you
of
have
course
to build to do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the basic plan. We're not trying to build lots of qubits in the beginning. We're trying to build a small number,
yeah,
but do it really well and, you know, build it with the future in mind.
Right. Okay. So tunable coupling.
Tunable coupler, tunable
transmons. Tunable transmons laid out in a lattice.
Yeah, we think that the super the surface code
right
architecture is good, you know, for near, you know, and if someone comes up with some better ideas, we'll think about it. But
right,
you know, coupling to a lot of qubits is hard.
Yes,
and you know, you take for example, this is what I've been told by some people at Google, and you know, I haven't done the analysis myself, but they do an architecture where sometimes you connect to 2 qubits and sometimes you connect to 3.
Right.
And, you know, that's really much easier to make something.
Yeah.
But what I've been told is that if you have qubit dropouts, because we're not going to make a perfect chip.
Right.
Then that architecture is pretty intolerant to errors, whereas the surface code, you can have, I think, a 1 or 2% errors,
right.
dropouts,
right.
and then you can work around it because
right.
the connectivity
because
is
the connectivity
higher.
Is better.
So this is
that
an example
sense.
Of a system engineering
yeah,
thinking
yeah.
that you can do things that is kind of simpler right now,
right.
but you really have to think long term.
Right.
You know, what's going to be a more reliable? So
yeah.
reliability is a big is
of
a
course.
Big issue. Of course.
And when you look at, you know, over the last year, right, we've obviously had some really big stories around error correction and also sort of new iterations of superconducting qubit design. So not
right.
just CAT qubits, but dual rail qubits and, you know, the Atlantic qubit quantum circuits, et cetera. Do you see sort of that low level qubit design as being something that's somewhat flexible over time? Like, in other words, your grand plan is the whole system architecture, but you could potentially swap out a different
so so design. So our business plan is to get really good at fabrication.
Okay
and you know, do that well, and we're gonna work it out for our own qubit
okay.
design. However, we're gonna generate the processes and PDKs and whatever, so that if someone else wants to build their thing, then they can build it in
right.
ours. In fact, we're meeting someone today or tomorrow to discuss,
great.
You know, make sure that we're going to compatible.
And that collaborative set of
yeah,
partners.
Yeah, it's a collaborative
that
thing.
It makes sense to have multiple potential qubit designs in that sort of
that's
large
right.
ecosystem.
And, you know, that's straightforward to do. And
right.
in our, the way that we designed the business model and our ecosystem, then we can change that.
Right.
So if someone has a better qubit, then that's fine. Now, what I would say is, although there's all these nice papers out there, and, you know, this is great. I really like it. We need to explore. It's not clear to me that they're going to have the right system design
mm.
to get everything to work right.
Mm.
You know, for example, with our design, we think we can get a good high-fidelity qubit gate with the intrinsic fidelity in the 10 to minus 6 or so.
Wow.
So, you know, it's very, very good. With a 35 nanosecond gate, a
mm.
really fast gate.
Yeah.
Okay, not quite as fast as the one qubit, but really
right.
fast. And given we have a limited coherence time, and you always want to, you know, make a fast gate, then that's a very good design. Good design, 4 qubits, you know, you can lay it out. So you know, we're willing to talk to people, but we think we have pretty good design.
Mm-hmm.
But that's good.
Yeah.
You have
yeah.
a good. You, what you want to do is you have a good baseline design.
Right.
And if something better comes along, we'd be happy to pivot.
Right, right.
And we'd be happy, at once we develop this, we'd be happy to fabricate, you know, a chip for someone else. So, you know, we can do that.
Yeah.
We have no problem with that.
Yeah. Out of curiosity, so you're saying 200,000 potentially in one fridge, and your goal is sort of a million qubit system. Are you thinking about transduction at this stage?
So there's three ways to scale to, you know, millions. One is to have a big fridge.
A really
and
big
then,
fridge.
A really big fridge. Okay. You know, okay. It's expensive, but yeah, it's a little bit ugly. It's not modular enough.
Yeah.
But, you know, okay. And then the couple things has to do with transduction. Everyone's talking about optical.
Right.
And the problem is it's not quite there yet.
Right.
But people are working on it, and then, you know, we'd be happy if someone to develop
right.
that. And the nice thing is building the modules at 20,000 and then at, you know, let's say 200,000, it's very natural to think of those modules as the central CPU and the other modules
right.
as the distillation
right.
For the T state,
right.
the A state generators. And then to, you know, network it
yeah.
in. So the surface code architecture, you know, allows you to build that modularity.
Right.
But again, we have to make the optical communication. So people have gone a long way, but it's still,
yeah.
you know, it's still
it's one of the
short.
Areas I watch with
and
fascination.
And even with Atom systems.
Yes, I know.
I've learned a little bit about them,
yeah.
and I think people can do it, but
yeah.
the communication speeds are
I know,
really,
it's in hertz.
Really, yeah, and then it's a lot of overhead
yeah.
and a lot of distillation you have to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a big research area.
Yeah.
So we kind of have two different plans, and then we'll see. Now, also in the paper, our theory people have said, you might be able to do kind of error mitigation and break up the system classically in a clever way so that you might be able to tolerate a lower, a smaller system.
Right.
So, you know, we'd be happy to consider that too. And obviously we can build systems available to
Right.
But, you know, right now we're at, you know, 100 qubits
yeah.
or so.
Yeah.
And it's hard to know what it's going to be like, yes. you know, in the future.
Yeah. I always think that about, you know, the speculation about algorithms or applications. It's sort of like, well, you have to sort of build it to see what you can do with it.
Build it until you have applications.
I know.
We have to build
it. It's a chicken and egg problem.
Yeah, that's right. And standard problem, we have to do that. So just to tell you a little bit about my talk.
Yes, please.
If you look at the rate of progress, let's say the Google group and the number of qubits, it's a good proxy because they're making the qubits better.
Yes.
If you extrapolate that out as to when we'll get to 1 million qubits, okay, I will be dead. Okay?
I was guessing it was going to be bad news.
Yes, that's bad news, okay? And what I also say is, if you look at all the young people in the audience, they will be retired.
Yeah.
And so we're in the situation now where we really want to make it go faster.
Right.
And, you know, that's the nice thing about a startup company is you're able to think more creatively, think out of the box. Let's, you know, what do we need to do and try to assemble the team. You don't have that inertia. So, yeah, we're basically, for my personal goals, is I want to build.
Self-motivation is good,
John. Before I die, okay? And I think we have a plan where we can rapidly accelerate it. Because,
that's
of course,
great.
You know, it's nice that this is funded well, both from private government, private industry, and the like. But this long horizon is not good economically.
Right.
And we're trying to figure out how to speed it up.
Capital has a limited attention
span.
That's
right. That's right. And you know, originally when we did the quantum supremacy 5 years ago, it was 10 years.
Right.
Well, we're halfway through 10 years, and we got a factor of two.
Yeah.
Okay? So it's a little slow.
Yes.
And I'm going to say that it's generically hard. So our position paper was, you know, what's an approach to solve that problem?
Right.
And it's also approach, like I said before, is how to make it cost effective.
Right.
And
right.
how to do it in a way that makes sense that
way. I was thinking as well, you know, I mean, again, from this sort of systems architecture kind of point of view, I mean, it makes sense that what we're chasing is that moment when we can leverage everything we've learned about CMOS, right? I mean, that's the most successful human scale story that's ever existed. We fabricate like trillions of transistors a day at this point.
Right.
So, I mean, in some sense, does it feel like superconducting qubits are you know, one entrant in a race? They sort of emerged around sort of 2000-ish, but there's all of the qubits are kind of on that same race to try to get to the point where there's an inflection point where all of a sudden you can have that monolithic solution moment when suddenly you unlock the secret to scale.
So let me, you're right in what you're saying, but it's a little bit more nuanced, but it's an actually interesting thing. You want to take advantage of CMOS, but if you go to a CMOS foundry, and we actually tried that in the last few years, and we got a piece of paper out of it.
Right.
But the problem is they have CMOS tools and they want to shoehorn your process into a CMOS process.
Yes.
Now, for spin qubits, you know, okay, you can do that, fine. But for superconducting qubits, it's a little bit different of a process. So it's fine, but you still have to buy the tools and bring them up and all that.
Right.
So the way we figured this out, it took us a while to figure this out profoundly, okay? We knew it intuitively from the beginning, is not to go to a foundry. And it's not a 300 millimeter foundry is the answer.
Okay? Right, got it.
You go to 300 millimeter because they have the latest, most advanced tools. The latest processes are only in 300 millimeter and not in 200 millimeter.
Right.
And if you want to backport them,
I see.
It's too expensive.
Right.
Because, you know, they don't want to redesign. There's no market.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the other thing is we have to make two new tools, a new process. Okay, the process exists, but you have to combine it in a tool.
I see.
So the secret is to go to a tool maker.
I see.
And in our case, that's Applied Materials.
Got it. Okay. Got it.
And that collaboration has been fantastic.
Excellent.
Okay. And it's basically because we can tell them what we understand about the physics.
Got it.
And they go away and say, yeah, we have these Versant tools. And then we work together.
Right.
And then we finally say, okay, these are the tool sets.
So that's upstream from the fab, the eventual fab.
Yes, because right. and the thing is they know how to do the various processes,
right.
And they have experience.
Right.
And, you know, they all the time are selling to people who want to do something new and they have
right.
to develop in labs. So they're used to this.
Right.
And, you know, what we're doing is you know, within the what they're normally doing.
Right.
And the nice thing is, you know, the tools that we want to make this in are, let's say, $50 to $100 million. I don't know what it's.
Right.
And I'm going to say that's even too expensive for, the you know, Google or whatever until you're selling something.
Right.
Right. It's way too expensive.
Yeah.
But, you know, for them, they have these systems. They can retrofit it relatively cheaply and then try it out.
I see.
And then they have a, you know, several billion dollar
right.
research clean room.
Right.
So for a modest amount of funding,
that makes
working
sense.
With the right people, and
yeah.
of course, we had to convince them we knew what
yeah.
we were doing. Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay. Then you could take advantage of this. So as
so it's, it's their tool, our tooling R&D process is what you're plugging into, essentially.
That's right. Right. Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
And then they've been able, you know, they have to bring it up. It's taken a while to bring
yeah.
it up, you know, 6 months.
Right.
But they can bring it up in a way that just blows your mind in terms of like the university fab you ever
right.
did, because they have
right.
real experts there.
Yeah.
And then also we're thinking about, you know, how to do certain things in a couple years, and they have experts on that too.
Right.
So you can really put together anything. But, you know, basically every process step is way better and way more reliable. And the really interesting thing, and I'll be giving a talk on this later today, is we just make simple resonators, you know, okay, just to check out the materials. And that's actually took a while to get that to work right, okay? But the reproducibility of those resonators, like the resonant frequency, is way, way better than we ever did it.
Right.
And that's over a huge 300 millimeter wafer.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you go look at the specs of what they're doing, they have nanometer precision
right.
on various
right.
things and flat surfaces and big grains and all these crazy things that you can't even imagine doing.
Yeah.
And that just comes out of, you know, their knowledge
right.
base.
Right. It's the spectrum from science done by postdocs
yeah.
and PhD students
yeah, yeah, yeah.
to engineering,
yeah, and,
right?
You know, they have, you know, decades and decades
Absolutely.
Of experience, and then we take advantage of
right.
it. So it takes a while to get there, but then in the end, you have something that is really kind of amazing. Now, of course, we have to show that it's going to translate to
right.
qubits. My guess is what's going to happen is we're going to translate to something that kind of people have already done on their, let's say, their best qubits or
right,
best thing.
Right.
But we'll be able to make it reliably.
Right.
And we'll be able to make it over a big 300 millimeter wafer.
Right.
And to, you know, get it with the parameters set right and get everything work right.
right.
But there's a chance that it'll be much, because it'll be more reliable, it'll also be much better.
Right.
So we, you know, we'll have to check that. But it looks really, really interesting.
That's exciting. So can you tell me roughly when you'll have a system that you can start, like, publishing results or getting people to kick the tires on?
Well, okay. So first of all, from the working with in Taiwan, Academia Sinica and ITRI, an archive paper was posted yesterday.
Oh, great.
On a process that gets rid of these liftoff junctions.
Okay.
And liftoff, of course, no one in their right mind in the semiconductor industry would ever do liftoff, okay?
Yeah.
It's very, very dirty. Maybe at the back end or something, but to depend on that's bad. So we publish that. We still have to make it better. So that's published. We have the position paper.
Right.
And we're working on getting everything figured out. Now, one of the things, it's going to be better than publishing. Okay, we'll publish.
Good.
Okay. But what's better than publishing is that our CoLab business model is to make available to us our good qubits.
Great.
And our good system.
Great.
So the big thing we do is what's called the CoLab Start System, where we deliver a system that's essentially equivalent to our best research grade systems. So we take all the knowledge of that and we reproduce it and we give it to you, or sell it to you.
Yes.
Give it to me, it's expensive. We sell it, and then people can, you know, use good qubits.
Right.
And it's part of our collaboration strategy, because we think university groups, they can test things that maybe we
sure.
don't have the time with, or they're going to test and maybe come up with new ideas.
That's great.
And then besides the qubit systems, we are going to make available chip mounts and some filters and some electronic testing.
Cool.
So that, you know, people can make sure that their systems are kind of up the grade.
So
there's just a lot of infrastructure
yeah.
to make good qubits, and we'll try to make that available.
And when does that start?
We're hoping, actually last night we talked to a group, and they said they wanted to buy a chip mount from
Great.
Us. So, you know, hopefully in the next few weeks.
Great.
And the CoLab said there's another group that's talking about it, and we hope to get them out a quote and
Terrific.
Get a thing in the next month or so.
Great. So this is going to be a big year for you then.
Well, yeah, hopefully if we can get all this to work.
Excellent.
So that's good. So, and then, you know, and then as we make the chips, and we've tested it enough for ourselves, and maybe, you know, publish some papers. But it's going to be better, because it's like the super appendix where you actually get a chip,
right? Yeah.
Okay, you know, that you can play with yourself.
Right. Right.
And then I would say one of the things we're trying to do is to make these good qubit systems requires a lot of patience and calibration and the like. And we're working closely with quantum machines to
right.
do that right, make sure the control systems are good and doing that. But we're trying to fix various things in the qubit chips at the low level so that when you go to calibrate it, it's going to be a lot easier.
Mm.
And you know, because what we did at UCSB and then Google really required, you know, a race car driver
right.
to drive the
yes.
chip. And we want it to be, you know, not quite a Tesla self-driving,
right.
full self-driving, but, you know, towards that.
Right.
We want to move in that direction.
I mean, Tesla's just moving towards that as well.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, okay, there's a
in
lot
fairness.
Of hype, but fine. But, you know, you understand.
Yes, absolutely.
We want to move towards that.
Right.
And it's not just making better software. You want to make better hardware.
Yeah.
So, you know, as an example, we're collaborating with Synopsys, who makes EM simulation
right.
and you know,
design software.
Design
yeah.
tools.
Yeah.
And we're working with them to figure out how to do an EM simulation on, you know, 1,000 qubit device mm. or something. It's actually a hard problem
yeah.
because of the different length scales involved.
Right.
And but they have some knowledge base, and they've done it on other kind of problems, and they just have to apply it to
well,
ours.
That's fantastic, John. I think it sounds very much like you've found a model that is going to have sort of multiplying positive effects on the whole ecosystem, because everybody who's involved in that partnership.
We're going to help other people make money, and that's fine. Okay, I'm just excited. We want to have a valuable company. We think
yeah.
we'll do that. We think that's the way to, and I think we have to do this, because I think the physicists are being a little bit naive, you know, what it takes. Now, I don't know exactly what everyone's doing,
yeah.
but I think a horizontally integrated, a lot of collaboration is gonna help
yeah.
the field a lot.
That's fantastic. Well, we'll be watching.
Oh, and
very
by the
closely.
Way,
yes,
it's really fun.
of course.
And because I get to talk to people who are experts in their domain.
Yeah.
And then we get to learn about all these things in great detail.
Right.
You know, in a way that you could never hire someone in your own company
of course.
With that kind of expertise.
Yeah.
And then also, I find it's talking to the managers of the other companies. They're really good, and they're used to managing a hardware project,
mm.
which is different than managing a software project.
Right, right.
And that's, you know, at least at our level, that's fine. And it's really interesting to learn from them. So,
yeah.
So yeah, I get to experience things, which I find really, really fun.
It matches with, I mean, you tend to have a very holistic perspective, and that's the approach that you found with Colab. So it sounds
terrific. Exactly.
Honor. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been great. Excellent.
Great. That was fun.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the podcast, which is a production of The New Quantum Era, hosted by me, Sebastian Hassinger, with theme music by Omar Costa Hamido. You can find past episodes on www.newquantumera.com or on Blue Sky at newquantumera.com, where if you comment on or reply to a post about an episode, your comment will go straight to the website, so we'll be sure to see it and respond. Thanks again to the APS and Quantum Machines for their support of this episode. And thanks to John Martinez for a really enjoyable conversation. If you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe and tell your quantum curious friends to give it a listen.